a.m. and 10 a.m. But that's a good real time. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to FBC Radio Live. That's right, it's Friday. It's Friday the 13th. For any of you superstitious folks out there that, don't like walking in front of black cats, under ladders, all that stuff, breaking mirrors. I do all of that today, John, actually. I find every black cat, I have them walk in front of me. I walk under every ladder, and I smash as many mirrors as humanly possible, because I do not believe in those superstitions. But
I generally don't, but sometimes I do. But you live with some black cats, don't you? Or any of the cats black?
One's like half an head. It's a Siamese cat, so he's dark. So he's not, okay. It's not completely black. So I wouldn't consider that under that. No, I lie. I'm very actually superstitious. I was a goalie, you know. Of course I'm superstitious. Mm-hmm. I used to watch the same video before every game. I used to do the same post-stick tap. Before, mm-hmm. Every face-off. I mean, it's the same thing over and over and over again. But in reality, Friday the 13th, it's just, obviously, it's fun. I'll ask you this real quick, and I don't want to talk too much about this, but Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, which franchise are you taking?
I'm not a big horror fan. We talked about that, I think, last week. But I'll go with Nightmare on Elm Street. It seemed to be a little bit more, I don't know, self-deprecating, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that. I'll go with Nightmare on Elm Street. Again, not a huge horror guy, but I'll go with that.
Well, you should really get with it. Horror is great. I love horror. But speaking of horror, I... The horror that Celtics fans went through the other night, we'll rip the band. I mean, that was a bad loss. Yep. I can't speak apparently at this point. That's how much it affected me, that game. That was a game they were, for the most part, it felt like they were in control of. Although, here's the thing, John, early on, they were very fortunate because they just weren't turning the ball over. And you know that wasn't going to last the entire game. When you have zero turnovers through the first, quarter and a half, nearly 20 minutes of gameplay, that you know that's not going to, last the entire game. And right on cue towards the end of that first half, they made a few mistakes. And, all of a sudden those turnovers started happening in the second half. And, ultimately that was what lost them the game, and poor offensive rebounding. Because you got to figure that, like, as bad as they, I don't even want to say it because it was weird. I thought they played well at times, but they do something that frustrates the hell out of me, and it's forcing the three when you should just be creating easy baskets for themselves. And they could have done that early in that game. It created a much bigger gap between them and the Bucks that may not have been able to been overcome by Milwaukee, because the reality of it was Giannis and everyone else. Like, Giannis had to be great for them to just be in that game, and the Celtics blew it.
Yeah, I mean, every opportunity to win. 10 minutes left, you're up 14 points. From that point forward, you're outscored 31-14. Milwaukee goes 6 of 6 from 3 in the fourth quarter. They also corral 7 offensive rebounds, including the big one, Bobby Portis rebounding Giannis's second missed free throw, which...
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that still frame shot of that, but that was... My response... Yeah, my response was the clip from Home Alone where Kevin sees Buzz's girlfriend and just goes woof and slams the pitcher down, because that's the only thing I could think of.
Well, my response was the 2014 NFC Championship game when the Packers, if they had just... covered the onside kick, would have went to the Super Bowl. Because to me, when you give up an offensive rebound off a missed free throw, it's similar to not recovering an onside kick, and Portis made them pay for that.
Well, that's
but that game was lost way earlier than that.
Well, that's a great point lead. Well, I was going to jokingly say, oh, that's a great comparison, but it kind of is, because if you think back to that game, the Packers didn't capitalize on the many opportunities they had early. Now, a lot of that loss will be weighted on the special teams play, much like it is the failed rebound, late in that game off the missed free throw. But it was early on, like I said, where, you know, they had a chance to really, really create a massive gap between them, but they just felt the need to huck threes. And look, I get it. I understand that's how the game's played now. And, like, you know, when you're hot, and you need the, you know, a good 3-point shooting game. But, like, that can just zap the momentum. Like, think about how many, like, opportunities they could have had to a quick 2 or 4 points. I mean, just in successive possessions that they just kind of squandered while Milwaukee was really trying to figure out what the hell they were trying to do. Because Giannis, again, was the only guy the entire game, essentially, that was hitting shots. And, you know, the Celtics could not take advantage of that.
What also was true, and you look at Jason Tatum, was 2 of 10 from 3 in the first half. He had a happy trigger. He kind of channeled Carmelo Anthony, and that's not a compliment. Which, you know, he put up a lot of points. He had 34 the other night, but he took 29 shots. That's not terribly efficient. And the ironic thing is, Ian, in the fourth quarter, they didn't attempt 1 3-pointer, that's the other extreme, which isn't good either. You can kind of break it up where there's going to be an opportunity to maybe hit a three and fall momentum. But again, the last 10 minutes was just a disaster. And I think the biggest thing is, besides Milwaukee hitting 6 straight 3-pointers and getting 7 offensive rebounds, the fact that the Celtics took their foot off the gas offensively. Yep. They went with a small lineup. If you're going to go with a small lineup, you have to play fast. Play with force, right? You know, keep it up for the final 10 minutes of the game. That's where they lost that game, when they had opportunities to increase that 14-point lead up to 20, or just maintain the 14-point lead. So we're not talking about not rebounding a missed free throw, or what the hell Marcus Smart was doing in the final minute, making mistake after mistake. We wouldn't even get there. And it's similar to that Packers loss to Seattle. If they had just scored some touchdowns instead of kicking, you know, 19-yard field goals, then that onside kick doesn't even happen. That's where you lose the game. You shouldn't even be in that situation. And the Celtics found themselves in that situation. And by the way, one thing we talked about throughout the year, as great as the Celtics have been in the second half of the year, throughout the season, they were 5-15 in games decided by 5 or fewer points. If this thing comes down to the end that close, you're going to have to favor Milwaukee. They're a team that's won a championship and seems more comfortable in those situations. As great as the Celtics are, again, 5-15 in games decided by 5 or fewer points in the regular season. And so far in this series, they're 0-2 in those situations.
Yeah, and shades of the first half Celtics certainly seeped in during the, you know, certainly in the late stages of that game. And look, Marcus Smart had a rough couple minutes. There's no doubt about it. I'm not about to pile on him like, you know, some people were. And look, I mean, he's getting, you know, he's getting the meme treatment. And I get, you know, it's funny, you know, especially if you're a Bucks fan and all that stuff. But, you know, the reality of it is he's been every bit deserving of that defensive player of the year. I know people are jumping on him for flopping, but it's like, you know what? You stand in there, plant your feet, and take a shoulder from Giannis and tell me, you know, tell me it's easy and you just flop. It's like, you know, it's the nature of how basketball is played. I mean, there's a responsibility on Giannis's part to, you know, they both have a right to that position. And if Marcus Smart establishes himself within the rules, if Giannis hits him square in the chest and he falls down, that's not a flop. That's a foul. That's a charge. I mean, it's the letter of the law, John. So, you know, give credit where credit's due. Although, again, he did have a very bad last couple minutes. But that's just, again, that's living in the moment, not looking at the big picture. And the big picture, like you said, was that game was lost far earlier than what, you know, those final few minutes, because, like, you know, if anyone's watching that game, you can just see it tick, 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 tick away. And it was like the most excruciating, you know, just fall from grace there, I guess. So,
didn't it almost feel like a football team that had a 10 or 14 point lead that was draining the clock and trying to get to the end and not continuing to play, you know, maybe the Atlanta Falcons in their Super Bowl loss against the Patriots, where they just didn't keep their foot on the gas. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but it's apt. And that's kind of what happened with the Celtics. It's like, okay, we're going to play clock here. We're going to get the shot clock down, and then we're going to be stuck taking 4 shots because we've used up a lot of the shot clock. That's not the way to play. We saw them in game 2 when they had, you know, a 12, 14-point lead early in the fourth quarter. They just piled it on at that point. Jason Tatum closed the game or whoever else. And for some reason the other night, they weren't able to do it. I think they're a better team than Milwaukee. Not by much, but they are a better team. But they're now down 3-2, and they have to win tonight in Milwaukee. That's not going to be easy to do. Now, Giannis is the best player in the series, and oftentimes in the NBA, the team that has the best player in the series wins. That could be the case here tonight. But I still think they can go into Milwaukee and win, and then it wouldn't really shock me if we come back here Sunday and Milwaukee wins Game 7. The other series in the NBA have been dominated by the home teams. So far in 5 games, Ian, the road team has won 3 games in this series because both teams play defense, and that does travel onto the road, and both, I think, are capable of winning on the other team's court. But the Celtics are going to have very short memories. You as a goalie know that, right? You give up a soft goal, you got to move on to the next play. They're going to have to try to forget what happened.
I never gave up a soft goal, ever.
No.
No, yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I there's some silver lining here because I do think this game was a far more example of the Celtics beating themselves. And I don't mean any disrespect to Milwaukee, but, you know, you look at how much they needed Giannis. And to your point, Giannis is great and the best player in the series. And that could outweigh, you know, Boston being a better team overall. But I would like to think that Giannis is not going to hit 2 big 3s again, something he just doesn't do ever. And it was shocking, but I somehow expected when he put up that second one, I just knew it was going. I was just like, all right, that's going in. I've seen this story before. This is how it's going to play out. I don't feel like that's going to happen again. And if the Bucks don't get secondary scoring or offense from everyone else, which they haven't been doing, and much of that is a credit to the Celtics and how they've been playing, then I really like the Celtics' chances because I do think that they're capable of putting a game like this behind them. They just have to really, really focus on not falling into these traps. And look, we saw it late in the game, you know, most notably the play with Tatum. You know, and this is something that, you know, I think he gets rightfully criticized for. It's like, you know what, sometimes you just got to keep your mouth shut and just get back on defense because guess what? You know, you spent time yapping at the ref and it allows them to go down and hit a big three. So it's a shame that after that incredible play, that Jordan-esque play from Al Horford, Al Michael Jordan Horford,
as Jordan, I think.
I mean, it seems like it, but I mean, I saw, like I said, I was watching that, and I'm sure everyone that was watching that saw that coming from a million miles away because it was almost in slow motion when you were watching it live. But it was just a work of art. I want to get that on a poster. But the bad thing is, unfortunately, it led to absolutely nothing. I'm sitting there thinking, like, wow, what an exclamation point on a dominant big win. And then it just all went downhill from there. So definitely not ideal for the Celtics, but it's not the end of the world. And if their hockey counterparts can show you that it is possible to force a game 7, and that's what they're hoping to do. So 76ers, they didn't force a game 7. Real quick, what do you think about what Joel Embiid said about James Harden after the game?
Yeah, that we didn't get the James Harden from Houston. That's great. I mean, I love Joel Embiid because he has no filter.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when he retires, he'll go into the media and be very successful. He'll have a podcast and,
Very Shaq-like in terms of just deadpan, very dry sense of humor, but, you know.
Great. And look, Shaq has said that Embiid is more talented than he was.
Yeah.
And Shaq doesn't throw compliments around. That's how talented that guy is. Yeah, James Harden just looked like a shell of himself. I wouldn't be shocked if Doc Rivers is gone and coaching the LA Lakers next year because Doc Rivers was hired before Daryl Morey, who runs the 76ers, so there's no connection there. I would assume Morey will put his own coach in place after another disappointing run here in the postseason. Yeah, I mean, and then last night we also saw Phoenix with a chance to wrap up that series, lay a stinker against Dallas, and now they have to play a game 7. The Celtics-Bucks series has been, along with Memphis-Golden State, those have been two really intriguing series because there's close games and tough losses and physicality and all that. The other two have been like, you know, teams just give up, which is never an appealing thing. But yeah, Joel Embiid's a national treasure, a great basketball player. And yeah, that was just perfect what he had to say. Now we have to see what happens with Harden. If he opts out of his contract, he becomes a free agent. And I don't know who's going to throw $200 million at him. You know, he seems like an aging star.
Well, I was going to, my next question was going to say, is it possible that both the 76ers and, excuse me, Brooklyn lost this trade?
Absolutely. Like, no, it's a great point because it can happen, right? Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. And you weren't going to get anything out of Ben Simmons anyway, so you took a chance and brought in James Harden. And maybe you sit down with him and, you know, implore him to get in better shape. I mean, that's not easy to do with a guy who's made as much money and had the career he's had. But that's a big part of it, I think, unless he's just lost it. And that can happen. That can happen, especially in basketball. Whatever athleticism he had may be gone. So, yeah, this is a case where both teams underperformed. And here you have teams that are left are just better constructed, right? Like the Celtics and Bucks are better constructed teams, as are, you know, Phoenix. Dallas isn't really constructed. It's like Luka and a bunch of other guys. Memphis sometimes plays better without its best player. But, yeah, you see what's happening. And I forgot Miami, which is maybe the best constructed team because they don't really have a big three. They just, you know, put together a roster that fits really well together. Well, so, yeah, I mean, the NBA could be changing a little bit into this, let's not just go get a big three, because look what happened with the Lakers, the Nets, and now the 76ers. They're all home watching.
Well, and that's the thing, and I think we actually talked about this a few weeks. I'm going to pat myself on the back here, but I think I kind of asked the question. It's like, how often do big threes actually work? Like, everyone's so enamored with getting a big three, and it's like, it really only worked, like, maybe twice. Like, with the Celtics, yes, immediately it worked, and everyone just assumed it was going to happen. But go back to, like, even 2002, where the Lakers, you know, that collection of stars, the big names, and how much that failed. Miami, that first season, I mean, again, you know, yes, they made it to the finals, but it didn't work right away. And, you know, you can argue that, you know, had it not been for three of the best players in the league at the time, maybe it doesn't work. You know, you look at the Lakers now, and it, you know, your big three with AD, LeBron, and Westbrook, that, I mean, I think we all saw that as a failure waiting to happen. You look around the league at all these other things, you know, Oklahoma, you know, you can argue that maybe they were a big three before they were a big three, but those were all drafted players, so that's a little bit different. But, yeah, it, you know, just name it, and it doesn't seem to work out. You know, I like Miami in terms of how, you know, they've constructed their team, and I think the Celtics are really striving for that. You know, you have a president in place, obviously, now, and Brad Stevens, who obviously I think, based on his 1 year, you got to feel pretty good about him moving forward and building this team. You know, obviously, Ime Udoka, his first season started out rocky, but, you know, there's still room for improvement. But, I you know, you have to like where that's going right there. So, yeah, I like how Boston is constructed. Win or lose this series, you still got to feel pretty good about this team moving forward because, you know, I mean, these kids are still very, very young. And sometimes you have to remember that, you know, again, Jason Tatum may not even be hitting his prime yet. And, you know,
And Jaylen Brown gets better every year.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been arguably best player in this series, if not the entire playoffs. And, yeah, I think when you look at that, Ian, maybe they have to add a piece, or it just could be a case right now, and this can be frustrating to admit, but sometimes it's just true, that the Celtics couldn't break through for 8 years because LeBron James dominated the Eastern Conference. Maybe we're at a point now where it's going to be tough to break through because Giannis, who's now the best player in the world, is going to dominate the Eastern Conference.
You know what? I don't think, and this is no disrespect to Giannis, I don't think he swings the needle that much. And again, I think that's more
as much as LeBron, maybe, but I mean, I think he's the best player in the league.
No, I agree. I agree. I think LeBron is the best player of the league, and Giannis is a huge difference. Like,
no, I agree.
Like, yeah. I don't see,
thank
like,
thank you for that too.
No,
thank
I know, you. I know, I know. Nice, you know, say, everyone, thanks. I'm stopping. I'm butting in to make sure LeBron gets credit where credit's due. Like, thank I don't look at Giannis and the Bucks as a team that, like, oh, man, whoever's with Giannis, like Giannis is a great player. I don't think he doesn't have the killer instinct that LeBron does. And, again, this is like me saying that Aaron Rodgers isn't as good as Tom Brady. Well, of course he's not as good as Tom Brady because it's Tom freaking Brady.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say Giannis is bad. He's not LeBron James, so I don't think he carries that type of weight when it comes to, oh my God, we have to get through Giannis. Like if they go on to win the series, it would not shock me for Miami to go in and dominate them. Like that's what I'm saying. Like if LeBron beat the Celtics, then I'd be like, all right, well, here we go, another finals appearance for LeBron. You know what I mean? That's the difference to me. So.
And even those five straight times that LeBron beat the Celtics, he really never felt that the Celtics were going to win over LeBron, right? Because he was
there was 2018.
Yeah, 2018, you got the game seven, but then he just, you know.
Yeah, and then the Celtics quarter. At that point, you know, you had now again, I have to correct my memory. You know, no Gordon Hayward, and it was kind of a mess that season.
Kyrie was out.
Yeah, Kyrie was out. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, it was that was a mess. So, but still,
Tatum and
Brown
were really babies at that point. I think Tatum was a rookie. Brown was in his second year. Terry Rozier had a nice series. Marcus Smart hit a big shot. Yeah, so they weren't what they are now.
Well, and look, the Celtics, you know, LeBron's peak was at the time where the Celtics had, you know, were transitioning away from their, you know, big three. You know, and growing into a different era, so they were in some instances not competitive at all. But then, you know, kind of in the latter stages of it, they overachieved. But you know, at the end of the day, it was never really expected for them to go out and beat a team like LeBron. Here, it's like we agree. We think Boston is better than the Bucks. We think Giannis is the best player in the series, but. That to me isn't like, yes, he can take over and win these games, sure, but I'm not sitting there thinking he's LeBron James. So that I will give your guy some credit, and I will defend him in that instance. So but let's move on real quick, because I want to talk about and this is something that happened.
Your favorite guy,
yes,
right?
my favorite guy. Of course. I'm still trying to figure out how I can get my finder's fee, because I feel like my years of propping him up on social media helped lead to his 10-year, $375 million contract. Look, I'm curious to see how it's going to happen, too. You know, I obviously, you know, I would assume he's obviously a very smart person, and I think he's certainly capable of articulating what he thinks about plays and everything like that. Everyone seems to be focusing on Joe Montana and the likes. What if he turns out to be Peyton Manning? I mean,
that would be great, but I don't know if he has the same personality as Peyton Manning.
No, not the exact same, but I think there's a bit of a misconception about, you know, Brady's personality. Like if you've ever heard like teammates of his talk and you know about stuff that he does outside of being in front of the camera. Like, he's far more personable. He's not that, you know what I mean? He ingrains himself in just about every single culture. You know what I mean? That's who he is. So, to me, I'm like, all right, let's see how this plays out. And I think, obviously, Fox is paying for the name. I don't think, I'll put it this way. I don't think, and this is one of the arguments that I see out there, why are people throwing money around? I don't think people tune into broadcasts for particular announcers. But I do think that they tune out because of particular, you know, certain announcers, and I think that's a problem. It's not
Tony Romo.
Yeah, well, like, and also it's like, how many times, you know, were you going to tune in and hear, you know, just poor play by play or just, you know, poor analysis and stuff like that? So I don't think people are like checking like the games and saying, okay, who's the announcers? Like, who am I going to watch? No, but I think if you're sitting there watching a game and the broadcast is poor, well, that's going to irritate you, and it irritates a lot of people. So I think there is value, obviously, in paying for that name. We see, it's just what the market dictates, that there's a lot of money in these media companies, and you just see, you know, you just saw Monday Night Football get a huge win after years of really struggling. I mean, just having just a poor setup, like, you know, and not that that necessarily affects the quality of the games, but it does affect the broadcast. I mean, does anyone want Tony Kornheiser and Dennis Miller in the booth again? I mean, I'm still going to watch.
I love that, actually. Well, I love Dennis Miller in that. I you know, at the time was a big Dennis Miller fan. I think he's kind of lost his mind a little bit recently. But, yeah, I mean, they were trying to recapture Howard Cosell. And look, Cosell was a guy who really did move the needle because you either loved or hated him. But again, that's, you know, 40, 50 years ago. I think what the value with Tom Brady and Fox will be is that he's going to be a brand ambassador. Yeah. That's where you're going to get a lot out of him. He's going to play golf with executives from Coca-Cola to seal the deal on a big buy-in on Fox, right? I mean, he's going to make his money doing things like that. And I think he's comfortable with that. I think he likes to roll with those types of people as well. Right.
Well, he will be on broadcast, though. I mean, this isn't just
it's not Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays, you know, shaking hands at a casino. No, he'll be doing the games, and I think he'll put the time in because we know he's a diligent worker and he's very bright. Look, Troy Aikman, I think, is the best in the business right now. Troy Aikman doesn't have a massive personality either. I mean, he's kind of senatorial, you know what I'm saying?
Like think about
the
this.
The senators used to be.
Think about this, John. I mean, Tony Romo has too much of a personality, and it drives me exactly. Absolutely nuts.
Yep.
Like,
great point.
Like he, for example, and I'll shift it over to the sport of hockey. Wayne Gretzky. I think if Brady has a little bit more of a I don't want to say personality because I don't want it to think that he's being a character. That's the last thing I want. If he has a little bit more charisma, let's put it that way, than Wayne Gretzky, I think he'll be great. Because I think Wayne, you know, very serious, but if you listen to what he says, I mean, obviously, he knows a lot about the sport of hockey. He just, again, sometimes it seems a little too deadpan for the camera. I think Brady can bring a little bit of that charisma to the booth. And obviously, you know, that would prop up his, you know, again, immense knowledge of the game. When that happens, I still don't know. I think it certainly makes it seem like this is going to be his last year. However, I mean, that's the thing with Tom. I mean, he's not going to, if he had a choice of broadcasting a Super Bowl or playing in one, he's going to pick playing in one 100 times out of 100, especially if he feels like he's still capable of doing it. So I don't think this necessarily is 100% this is going to be his last year, but it does seem like he has a pretty nice situation lined up for him if it is. And, you know, at 45, it wouldn't necessarily be surprising. So,
yeah, no, I think it's going to be fine. It's going to be interesting. And again, there's a lot more than just doing the games. So they'll get their value there. And it's just cool for the Murdochs to say, hey, we employ Tom Brady. Now, I don't know if Tom Brady is going to do what a lot of the broadcasters have to do. Is he going to sit on the set with Colin Cowherd every now and then to prop up Fox Sports 1? Is he going to do radio hits on Fox Sports Radio? I don't know. Some of the broadcasters get turned off by that. I know Al Michaels like just refused to do that stuff when he was doing stuff at ESPN. It was like, I'm not going through the car wash of Get Up or whatever other shows were on at that time. So that's going to be interesting to see. But there's a lot of value in bringing him in. Again, you can't tell me executives from major corporations aren't going to be thrilled to play golf with him. Just the fact that they announced this the other day. Look, Boston Sports Talk Radio was dominated by Tom Brady agreeing to a 10-year, $375 million contract with Fox Sports. At the same time, the Celtics were playing the Bucks and the Bruins were playing Carolina and the Red Sox couldn't win a game. That was still like the lead story on Sports Talk Radio. That there's value there. There's value in that, right?
Well, I mean
just the announcement is a ton of value. The guy he's there with LeBron James as the two biggest athletes in this country.
Through the first quarter of this year, and it remains consistent every quarter, every year, Tom Brady's jersey sales lead. How is that possible, John? He's been in the league for 22 plus years, and each and every year he has the most purchased jersey. More than new players, than Patrick Mahomes, more than Aaron Rodgers. And it's like, you know, that's who he is because he does have a bit of global cachet, so to speak.
Yes.
And not just because of his wife, but again, when you played the sport for 22 plus years, you've been as successful as you are. And you know, he's unlike Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's a little bit more cultured. You know, and that's not an insult. That's just, you know, I'm more like Aaron Rodgers in the sense that, like, I haven't necessarily traveled the world. Well, you know what I mean? Like, Aaron Rodgers is a little bit more of an introvert, it seems like.
That would be interesting. Imagine Rodgers doing this. I mean, first of all, Rodgers would be the guy who refuses to play golf with, you know, CEOs of Coca-Cola because he doesn't believe in the product or whatever. He could, although Brady doesn't believe in Coca-Cola either. Remember when Ronaldo got the Coca-Cola bottle at the Euros and just kind of turned it away, and Brady tweeted out, you know, the GOAT knows what he's talking about. Don't drink soft drinks, which is, doesn't really go hand in hand. But he does have that feel of a soccer icon, right?
Like yeah, Ronaldo exactly. And Messi. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
LeBron and Brady are the two guys, and Tiger Woods when he was in his prime, and still, even though he's not the golfer he used to be, still draws a lot of eyes to the telecast. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I just want to see the first year he's doing games and some quarterback gets hurt, and the rumors are going to fly that Brady's going to come back and play. Because we heard that with Romo in his first year. And, I mean, it would be 10 times more, 20 times more with Brady because it's Brady. Like, that's going to pop up. We even heard it last year with Drew Brees. Remember
when
Jameis Winston went out? It was like, oh, maybe Drew Brees will come back. I think at some point, if they make that commitment to that, the money's fantastic. I mean, he's going to earn more in this contract than he did playing for 22 years.
Well, and that's why I say, despite all this, I don't think this is necessarily a absolute stamp on this being his last season. Because, I said, at the end of the year, if he puts together yet another year like he has the last, five, six, seven, I mean, every single year in his 40s. Then
22?
Yeah, I'm trying to limit it to just the immediate future. Yeah. So I said 40s, but you're right. I mean, you can go back. I mean, if he puts together exactly the same type of season he has his entire 22 year career, he's going to sit there and say, "Well, I can still do this." And
sure.
Why would I walk away aside from the money? And that's the thing. I think the money I'm sure he loves, but he doesn't. When it comes to shove, he's going to say, well, I can still play. So, all right. Well, before we wrap up today, I do want to bring up the NFL schedule a little bit because I want to ask you some of your thoughts on some of the games that were announced. And, well, first of all, the whole NFL schedule hype. I mean, everything. I saw people, you know, oh, the schedule thing is overhyped. It's over. John, everything in the NFL is overhyped, overdone, overcooked, over whatever, and no one cares. No one cares. So, of course, the NFL is going to squeeze every last bit of everything out of every single little event that they have, and they will maximize it to the absolute nth degree. That's fine. That's what the NFL does. Got to get used to it. It's not going to change. The NFL schedule is no different. But I was surprised that, one, the Patriots got 5 primetime games, which I'm pretty as a Patriots fan, pretty excited about. And very curiously, they got 4 in a row. That was pretty good. What other, I guess, matchups or weeks really stuck out to you? Because I'll be honest, week 1's looking like it's going to be a pretty great week to kick off the season.
Yeah, that's the big one. Obviously, you grab everyone's attention. You know, you kick off the season with the Rams at home. Because they won the Super Bowl, and they're playing Buffalo, which I think is the favorite to win the next Super Bowl. So that's going to be an interesting game, to say the least, and you go from there. And a lot of great matchups within the division, because that's pretty common. The Patriots go to Miami. I believe Green Bay goes to Minnesota, and some people think Minnesota has a chance to maybe contend this year against the Packers. So, yeah, you get all of that. The one thing that stood out to me is the Detroit Lions are the only team that will not play in a primetime game. Everyone has to play at least one Thursday game, and of course they play on Thanksgiving, so that fulfilled that part of it. And every one of their games, Ian, is an early kickoff, 12:30 on Thanksgiving and 1 o'clock every other game. Like, it feels like a throwback to like the 70s when the Patriots were on at 1 o'clock every week, you know, because they weren't really good, or it just wasn't as intricate as it is now. Like, you couldn't find even a primetime game. Later in the season,
I'm okay with that.
25 for the Lions. Yeah, I mean, who wants to watch the
forget,
Lions?
Forget this fairness. In last place. Forget this fairness stuff. I don't want to see bad teams on primetime games. If you want to get primetime games, be better. Okay. To be honest, I think they should have taken the Lions. I mean, I get it, tradition, and they're never going to do it. But get the Lions the hell off Thanksgiving. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
I'm so sick and tired of watching the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving, because it's like, okay. After the tradition feel of it, the blue and silver and it being in Detroit, I just don't care, because it's like, all right, the Lions are bad, just like they're bad every single season. I just don't really care about anything that they do. So get them off national. Give me 3 great games. Give me 3 divisional matchups between teams that actually realistically are going to matter at that point in the season. And unfortunately, Thanksgiving doesn't really do that for us. But oh well.
Yeah, no, it's not, and I'm not crazy about the night game on Thanksgiving. I mean, the Patriots are playing in it this year, so obviously we'll all watch it. We probably watch it no matter who's playing, but that's almost like at that point you're in a coma from. I know you don't eat turkey, but the rest of us do eat turkey, mashed potatoes, and stuffing, and we're tired.
Yeah,
you're on to ham or beef or pork or whatever else you're eating.
Everything but yeah, turkey.
Everything but turkey. Yeah, you're the anti-turkey guy.
I actually order succulent duck. It gets flown in.
From well, you know, snob.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Poppy.
Yeah, from Poppy's.
Poppy was a bit sloppy.
Yes.
but I think also, we'll look forward to Packers-Buccaneers.
Yes.
Which I'm surprised is a 4:25 game, not a Sunday night or a Monday night game. I mean, that's going to be a massive game because we do think the Buccaneers and the Rams are probably the two best teams in the NFC with the Packers being the third best team. So they all kind of play each other because they're defending division champs. So those games are going to be important. Rodgers doesn't generally play well in Tampa. So, you know, that's going to be a tough one for him. It'll be very, very hot there. But, yeah, it's just – I was surprised to see the Patriots on five primetime games. There's 12 teams that made five primetime games, which is the max. Now you can flex out later in the season. But, yeah, that's a good thing for the Patriots. Again, Robert Kraft does sit on the TV committee. They're still a big brand, and they still have interesting matchups, obviously. When they
well, and look, I know the coverage needle on the Patriots is so out of whack. It's like a size – you know, just something that's just ticking back – I can't even, I don't know. I don't want to talk about science that I have no idea what I'm talking about because I might be saying the wrong thing. So I'm gonna save myself the incorrect statement I'm about to make. But it's like a meter that's just all off whack. You know, imagine, okay, let's put it this way. Imagine you go to Chernobyl, 1986, and you have a, what do you call, you know, that thing that measures radiation, and I was about ready to impress everyone with me calling it by the right name, and I'm completely blanking on it right now. Hopefully it comes to me before we get off the air. But basically, you go up there, and it's ticking all over the place. That's what the coverage of the Patriots is. So the Patriots are terrible, they're great, they're somewhere in between, and they're everything else. And the reality of it is, they're a pretty good team. I don't know if they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but you know, they're a playoff team last year with a rookie quarterback, and I don't think that's being given enough credit. There's focus on who's going to call plays, and Belichick can't draft. I mean, he can. So I don't think that the coverage of this team in particular is appropriate. So I think, yeah, five was kind of surprising, but I get it because there's still a draw. And even if, you know, even if you're not a fan of the team, you still hate them enough that you want to watch them lose. And that's enough to draw, grab eyes and keep the attention of everyone. So, I think, some of the games, you know, for instance, the Raiders game, you have, you know, the Patriots going out to Las Vegas and they're playing against Josh McDaniels, their former coach. There's a lot of, you know, drama in that, regardless of now, again, if the Patriots are 2-10 or 2-11 or whatever it is, I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe that gets changed. But, you know, the reality of it is I imagine they're going to be very competitive until the very end, certainly in the playoff mix.
Yeah, and so will the Raiders, right? Because they've made some really good moves in the offseason, bring a new coaching staff in, add, you know, Chandler Jones and Devontae Adams, and, you know, have a good draft. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to be in there. And, again, they're a big brand. They're not the brand that the Cowboys, Packers, and Steelers are, who could, you know, have back-to-back losing seasons and still will be on national TV more than anyone, because they have a real national brand. I mean, there's a ton of people that are Cowboys, Packers, and Steelers fans because of how great they were in other decades, or just how big the brand is. So, but yeah, it's good to see that they'll be on a lot of these standalone games. And I think, you know, when you look at how important this is for the league, the recent contract that the league signed with the networks is $113 billion over 11 years. Mm-hmm. So for the next 11 years, every team is going to get a check for $300 million just from the TV revenue, not to mention everything else. Merchandising, concessions, seats, everything. Right there is, you know, you've already turned a profit even after your payroll. So it's going to be interesting to see. ESPN, which pays $2.7 billion a year, tended to get the worst games, but I think there's going to be some improvement there because I'm sure they spoke up and said, look, for $2.7 billion, can you give us some good games on Monday night?
Because
how many times have we sat down on Monday night going, where are they coming up with this? I mean, even the Patriots Monday night game at home is against the Bears, which is kind of a weird matchup.
Yeah, but at the very least, at least that's somewhat early in the season. Like you're gonna, you know, you at least you know maybe you think the Bears might be somewhat competitive. Maybe week seven is a little, being a little bit too optimistic for thinking they're still going to be competitive, but we'll see. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt this time around. But anyway, so we're going to say goodbye for the day and, of course, for the week. We will be back Monday, and soon we will be kind of getting back to a more extensive talking schedule for all you folks out there that are just yearning for more Ian and John. Don't worry, you will get it. But we will be off for the next couple days. We'll be back on Monday, and maybe we'll have some more NFL news. Maybe we'll talk about more of our favorite games coming up, either week one or throughout the season in general. And maybe Tom Brady will, you know, sign another contract to go do some more media engagements for more money than he made playing football. So that's just how long he's been playing, John. And that's the incredible thing, because what he's doing now is making up for all that time he spent playing in an entire different era of football over a decade and a half ago, where, guess what, these contracts weren't what they were given now, where, you know, players are getting $40 million a year, John. We should have been quarterbacks.
Yeah, that would be good, except I can't play the position, so there's a problem there.
Hey.
Kind of like when Costanza wanted to be an analyst, remember, he wanted to be a sportscaster or announcer, and generally they hire people who are broadcasters.
Yes. Perfect, perfect. Great way to end it. Folks, have a great day, and we'll talk to you all on Monday.